We catch up with Stephen Brunt. Well, good morning, sir. Good to talk to you. How was Christmas?
Good morning. Christmas was lovely, quiet and snowy and lovely. But and now looking forward to a new year.
Are you?
Yeah.
Because I know that in some ways, people will have those post-Christmas blahs. It's like, oh, okay, that was a lot of work for, you know, a day and a half. And now the credit cards are stacked up. We got a bunch of bills. And now what are we doing? It can be kind of a somber time.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is a year when, you know, a lot of people might be willing to kind of put the old year to bed and start something fresh. I think there's that, you know. And I don't know. I always feel it's, it always feels to me like kind of time to go back to work. That you one more party, and then next Monday morning you kind of put your head down and say 3 months till spring or 4 months till spring or whatever it's going to be.
I was going to say, well, you know, what's in terms of sports? What are the most memorable things? I guess it's tough when you have an Olympic year, and we did just talk about that, of course, with the male and female athletes of the year and all of that sort of thing.
I think it was an interesting year. There was, you know, there were some, I wrote a really bleak piece on sportsnet.ca about 2016 and always, but, so we'll put that aside for the moment. Like for me, the most important moment in 2016 was, you know, the death of Muhammad Ali and everything that kind of happened around that funeral in Louisville, and remembering the most important athlete of the 20th century for sure, and a huge cultural figure, and kind of the conversation that spurred, and that was a big deal, and that was bigger to me than any of the games that were played in 2016. But you know, you can go back to the Peyton Manning Super Bowl and, you know, work your way all the way through the year, and there's a lot of good stuff. You know, a very successful Olympics for Canada. An unbelievable year for Sidney Crosby, World Cup of Hockey returning, you know, in a different, slightly oddball form, but, you know, a satisfying result. Ottawa wins the Grey Cup for the first time in a bazillion years.
Yeah, we're not as happy about that one.
Yeah, I know, but there's probably a neutral element out there who, you know, are happy about that, and maybe not acknowledging the fact that one of the great CFL seasons in history kind of ended on the wrong foot, but yeah, I get it. So look, a lot of, and then, you know, and the Blue Jays are back in the postseason for the second year in a row, and not even, you know, a year ago, that's all anyone was talking about was, oh my God, the Blue Jays team of the year, and what a great run, and Jose Bautista's bat flip, and they, you know, almost duplicated that this year, and you know, as we turn the page, most of the Blue Jay conversation is about guys who haven't signed contracts or who went to other teams.
Why do I, and again, I profess to not being a diehard Blue Jays guy. We follow the team. I enjoy when they make the playoffs. But why, I feel if I'm a Blue Jays fan, I feel like bringing back Jose Bautista, which we're hearing rumblings about, really feels like a distant consolation prize to A, keeping Edwin, or B, getting anyone of substance through free agency.
Well, there's, you know, there's different ways of looking at it. I think if you bring back Jose Bautista on a 1 or 2 year deal, and kind of assume that he stays, you know, hope that he stays healthy, because the main thing that happened to him last year was he wasn't healthy, and you kind of close your eyes a little bit when he's playing in the outfield and hope that that goes well. But you know, it's a reasonably good, it's, you know, it'd be a reasonably safe assumption that he will have a big offensive year, because he was still a good offensive, very, very good offensive player when he was healthy last year. And, you know, if you don't have to make a long-term commitment, you know, like a big part of the issue with Edwin, you know, though, as it turns out, you know, the Jays offered him 4 years and apparently a 50-year option that he turned down, which is, you know, again, when you look at what he signed for, it's pretty astounding. But the tough part of that contract wasn't the first 2 years; it was the second 2 years, or the last 3 years, as he got deep into his 30s. When you know he's going to regress, almost every player in history has regressed at that point. And you know, you're paying big time, top of the market money for a guy who probably is a shadow of himself. If you take Bautista on a short term, and he's motivated because he's trying to reestablish his value now for maybe another run at free agency, now, I think the only way they do it, though, is if they start to think that no one else is going to sign him before June, when the draft pick compensation would disappear. So if you don't think you're going to get that draft pick for him, which they would, they covet, if you think he might hang around until then, you might say, well, what the heck? Like, and, you know, cut a deal where Bautista can save face a little bit and, as I say, maybe a year plus a, some kind of a team option, you know, maybe 2 years at a reasonable rate guaranteed. I don't think that's a terrible way for the Jays to go, but you know, they've got it. But there's a ton of other guys out there right now. You know, it's you know, one of the weird things that's happened this winter is just the market has collapsed for you know, power bats, outfielders. There's, you know, that's, look, Edwin took way less than we thought he was going to get, and there's a whole bunch of guys who are just sitting there who haven't done anything yet.
So is he, and out of that group, is he the best option? I understand there's an affinity for him to come back to Toronto and vice versa, I would guess, for some people. But is there anyone else out there that you would rank ahead of him?
The guys who are out there that I would rank ahead of him are guys you'd have to trade for.
Right.
So, yeah, Andrew McCutchen, right? Charlie Blackmon, you know, the Mets guys, Curtis Granderson, maybe Jay Bruce, Brett Gardner. Like, there's some outfielders who you might be able to trade for, but, you know, we've talked about this before. The Jays are in a bit of a bind there because what are you going to trade? You know, the farm system is a bit depleted. The value is in the lower part of the farm system, so that has less value. Are you willing to trade a guy off your major league roster, a young, controllable player, i.e. Marcus Stroman, to get, you know, a Charlie Blackmon, which it sounds like that was the ask for him? You know, probably not. Or Andrew McCutchen, you know, would you be willing to fork over a Stroman plus to get Andrew McCutchen? So those are, the, you know, that's the kind of bind they're in right now. Those guys would be better, and, you know, better, certainly better in the outfield, maybe not that much better offensively than 1 year of Bautista. But, you know, with Bautista, it's just money. So, you know, money and foregoing the draft pick. So, you know, Bautista is in a group with, you know, Mark Trumbo and some of the other guys who are unsigned that, you know, all of them have question marks, mostly defensive question marks. But he might be the best option of that group if that's the direction you're going to go.
What about the clubhouse?
That's a big what if. You know, I'll tell you, because, I got the distinct feeling at the end of last season that they were done with him. That they just, he's a tough guy to live with in a lot of ways. And I don't say that because I like Bautista. You know, I've spent a fair bit of time around him, both here, but especially in the Dominican. And, you know, he's a really smart player, you know, really smart guy, just in general. Very kind of aware of the world around him in a way that a lot of athletes aren't. But there's a chip on his shoulder, you know, just massive chip on his shoulder. And he's not a guy, like Edwin is the polar opposite. He was a guy who would disappear into his little corner of the clubhouse and have a big smile on his face every day. And, you know, everybody could get along with him. You know, with Bautista, you know he's there. Mm-hmm. And they've already got some guys on that team who are wound a little tight. You know, Josh Donaldson's wound a little tight. And Troy Tulowitzki is, you know, kind of crazy intense. And, you know, Russell Martin is an edgy guy. And I think, you know, that's kind of the center of that clubhouse. And, you know, do you want Jose Bautista over at his corner locker as kind of another, you know, another planet around whom, you know, things are revolving?
Yeah,
I think generally they would rather not, but they may have to make a kind of straight baseball decision here and, you know, hope that he comes back kind of ready to play a secondary role.
Because they're generally, when teams move on, it'll a lot of the times it's because they have somebody next in line to take over the leadership. You don't need this person there to step on toes. It's time to pass the torch, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, is that part of it? Do you see that there's somebody really in? Is it Donaldson? Is there someone who's in waiting and deserving of that? Because
I think the torch already got passed, and I think last year, you know, those guys were the core leadership group in the clubhouse was Tulowitzki, Donaldson, Martin. And I think they were relatively happy with that. I think, you know, again, those guys are not easy to live with sometimes either, but I think that the team hierarchy was relatively happy with that. And Bautista had been relegated to a more secondary role, but I don't know that he was happy with that. You know, he was the big dog, right up until that trade with the Miami Marlins, he was the only big dog in that room. And, you know, ever since then, really, it's been, you know, kind of a jostling of talent and a jostling of egos and, you know, kind of, and again, I know this all sounds like high school, but baseball players, you know, get together in February and then they part company in October. Like, you got to live with these guys every day. And it does. I think clubhouse dynamics are way more important in baseball than any other sport, just because there's so many days and so many hours of just sitting around in that clubhouse waiting for stuff to happen that, yeah, you can, things can get really sour really quickly. So, I think he has struggled to figure out what he is, you know, within that group. And it has not always been a comfortable struggle.
No, sorry, Bill, I was going to... Why is there, and we heard from John Morosi talking about how the Jays can come through with an offer here and save face and all of that. Why do they have to do that? Because the market is what the market is. Why do they need to overpay for Jose Bautista for time past? They gave him a qualifying offer of 17 and he turned it down. I don't agree with that, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Neither do I. And if they're doing that for those, if any of this is based in kind of public relations, fan relations, then that's a big mistake. You know, you can't run a team that way. And as you know, and again, as much as the kind of wailing and gnashing of teeth over Edwin leaving, you know, it's been really, really overwhelming around here. If you start running a team based on what the fans think, you're not going to win many championships. So, you know, you would hope that they boil it down to a baseball decision. But I don't know. You know, you don't know what ownership's role might be in a situation like this. You know, does somebody make a call to Mark Shapiro and say, look, you know, we're taking a kicking over the Edwin thing. Do you think maybe we could bring Jose back and make some people happy? Like, again, I would hope that's not what's happening, and I don't know. I have no knowledge of that being what's happening. But that's the kind of stuff that leads franchises in bad directions. You know, I think there's a million examples of that, aren't there, where, you know, somebody's, you know, where decisions are made for other reasons other than, you know, being competitive now and being competitive in the future. And, I think it might be a face saver for Jose because, you know, if he gets less than the qualifying offer, that's going to be a little bit hard to stomach after. Remember last spring and spring training when he made the big speech about there will be no hometown discounts. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, a huge number and a huge amount of term was floated around. I'm not sure if that came from him, but it's a big step down for Jose, and he's a very proud guy. So, you know, maybe they would need to create something for him so that he can say, "I won." Although that's a big ask right now.
All that being said, and they have taken a bit of a kicking publicly, Stephen. Do you see this as kind of an underwhelming off season so far for the Blue Jays?
Well, it's not done, and you know, I think you've got to kind of realistically look at what the team was last year, which was a team with great, you know, very, very good starting pitching, and in the end, a very good bullpen that won mostly because of that. You know, it was a different team than the team the year before, and that's intact. So, you know, I think from a kind of an emotional point of view, it's obviously been tough. And, you know, the other thing is they missed out on Dexter Fowler, right, which that would have been a pretty easy one to sell. But, you know, again, this is, you know, I'm not being an apologist for these guys, but, you know, they won the offseason the year of the Miami Marlins deal, right? Right about now, they were the betting favorite to win the World Series that year, and didn't pan out. You know, winning the offseason's not winning in the season, and everything is going to come down to whether this team is competitive, you know, into September next year. If it is, you know, no one's going to be moaning about favorite players who were lost, or they'll be wrapping their arms around whoever's winning those ball games. But if this team is not competitive, and this would have been true if Edwin was there, it'll go sour because, you know, expectations have gone from nothing to, oh my God, we're going to be, you know, we're going to be in the postseason in 2 years. You know, people have kind of forgotten the 18 odd years in between there when they were walking in the wilderness. So, yeah, it's a very kind of hair trigger environment for Jays and Jays fans. You know, especially the millions of people who kind of, you know, started watching the team a year and a half ago.
Chatting with Stephen Brunt here on Boomer and Warner in the Morning. There is an outdoor game reportedly and rumored to be played in your town, or not your town, the one you work in. But there's a lot of upheaval about ticket sales. I would love nothing more than to sit in Calgary and rip fans in Toronto. But I feel like there's other places to blame, is there not, between a Grey Cup, a World Cup, World Juniors, now an outdoor hockey game. There's a lot for your entertainment dollar.
Yeah, Blue Jays playoff run. You know, all that stuff sucked a lot of money, you know, out of the sports economy here. There's no question about that. And, you know, the World Juniors, they've, you know, they'll do, you know, Canada, U.S. tomorrow. You know, it'll be a full house, but there have been empty seats at the games in Toronto. And that's, again, I think that's part of the same thing, just that the market's a little tapped out. But, I don't know about you. I've always been kind of a healthy skeptic when it comes to these outdoor games. I know there was certainly some magic in that first one in Edmonton, and you know, even the one in Buffalo. But you know, if you go to the well this many times, and you know, BMO Field in Toronto we're not playing in Wrigley. You know, we're not playing in Fenway. We're not playing in Yankee Stadium. It's kind of, you know, it's not any of those things. They can't even call it BMO because of the sponsorship. It's going to revert to Exhibition Stadium for this weekend only. Because the sponsorship stuff, but I just think the thing's played out.
Yeah,
you know, it was a gimmick. There is no great tradition of hockey being played in football and baseball stadiums in ancient times. You know, they just made that up. They kind of created this phony nostalgia around it. And I say it's never been better than Jose Theodore wearing the toque in Edmonton to me. But I think maybe they have finally kind of hit the wall on this thing, and I don't think they're going to be. It's not going to be like an Argo game, you know, or even the Grey Cup where there were whole sections they had to sell. But you know, look, the tickets that are kind of remaining are $300 tickets.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go sit outside and watch hockey for $300? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The game in Michigan, you know, Michigan Stadium, which was the the same two teams and. That had a lot of pull because of the park, because it was so huge. But there's no great tingle of anticipation leading into this one.
I guess I view this. We talked about it earlier. I look at the outdoor games like I do the All-Star game now. It's not for you or me or whoever to watch on TV. It's in a way, I guess it's a made-for-TV thing, but it's not. It's for the fans in that city and within that fan base. If they're going to play in St. Louis, I don't care, but in St. Louis they're going to love it. I guess I'm just curious and interested, do Leaf fans, because I don't think Toronto's a hockey town. I think it's a Leaf town.
Correct.
So there again, are there not... Exhibition Stadium is not that big. Is it because they just played? Did everybody go down and watch it at the Big House?
Yeah, I think a lot of people went to the Big House. You know, those who wanted to go and do it went to the Big House. But the flip side of that is there is more legitimate enthusiasm around the hockey team itself right now than there's been in.
That's fair. Yeah,
I don't know how far you want to go back. You know, this is a team that might make the playoffs. they just went down and won both games on their, you know, their annual Christmas Florida swing, you know, beat a really good Tampa team last night. The young guys are all delivering. I don't think anybody's kind of crazy like they think they're going to contend this year, but the whole master plan thing seems to be unfolding the way it's supposed to. So, like, you would think, you know, that with a little bit of Leaf mania in the air, and you know, the chance to go out and watch Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews and these young players, that would actually enhance it. But I think they're two separate things. You know, I think I think this isn't really about that. It's not about the NHL regular season. It is a spectacle and it's a cash grab. And you know, look, it's not cheap to go to a Leafs game, and it's still hard to get a ticket. But I just wonder how many people are going to reach into their wallet at this time of year and say, boy, yeah, I got $300 to I got extra $300 to go out and sit by the lake and freeze my tail off and you know watch a hockey game off in the distance somewhere.
Yeah, right after Christmas and among everything else. That how many can you give me? I'll take 10. Right?
Yeah. No, yeah, look, yeah. I, again, I, like I I most of the guys who sing hymns about this stuff are guys who sit in the press box and are nice and warm watching it. So
and don't pay.
Yeah, I'm not. Look, I wouldn't do it on a bet. I'm quite happy to sit at home and watch it on TV to a point, but as someone who would not pay a nickel for that ticket, it's hard for me to say people should.
Yeah. So here we are on the eve of 2017. We talked about it here in studio. Jason, our producer, who you speak to, things are so good. He has no resolutions. There's no need to change a thing. I have a list that's too long to mention. For you, what do you look to? Do you look to better yourself in any way?
I look to spend more time fishing is my goal in life.
Is that possible?
Well,
hell? What?
That's my number one goal in life right now.
Goodness.
Because time is it's finite, right? So the more of those days I can spend, even not catching fish, that is my goal. To go to cool places and stand in the water and. Yes, so I will begin that quest next month and try and continue.
And one of my resolutions is to hopefully keep this job so I can talk to you and hear about your fishing trips.
Well, that's good, too. I think keeping jobs is a good resolution for everybody.
We're joined at the hip there, all right?
Yeah.
Hey, best of the season, and have a great New Year's Eve. We'll talk to you next week, so it's kind of, don't want to get too emotional, but like I say every time this time of year, we're so happy to have you join us. Twice a week. You're the best at what you do, and thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. And it's a blast, and it's been another it's been a bleak year for the world, but a fun year doing this. So how about that?
Amen. Thanks, Stephen.
All right. See ya.